before anything else, Wendy, before we start the show, and what a show. What a show, wall to wall. Not a second of downtime on today's show, Wendy. Before we get into that show, though, can we just welcome back a coworker, a friend, a loved one?
Who?
Steve Bertrand.
Oh, it's good to be back, you guys.
I missed you.
Yeah,
we
I missed you too.
So much.
Can I tell you, I really did miss you, Steve.
Thank you.
I did. I was, you
there
know.
There was nowhere for your pent-up raging hostility to go.
I know. Is that what it was all week that was bugging
me? Yeah, you need an outlet.
And I was having a lot of agita. I couldn't get it out.
Did you take my bruises, Bill? Did you pick up
a
few?
Well,
I was nicer without him.
Wendy was much nicer, and our neighbors were shocked. We kept having neighbors walk over and say, is everything okay here? Hmm. And there was. She just missed you. We all missed you.
Well,
I was following you on Facebook because you did a really lovely thing.
Yeah, you know, I have to just say, I don't like to talk too much about things, but I was down there with iCare International, and it's a, you know, some people from all over the area, but it started in Morris, and they do trips where they go to Mexico or Central America and fit people with eyeglasses. And I've been
no cost to them.
No,
correct?
No. So I've been involved at this end for a while, once in a while, publicizing it, but I've never been there. And it's just this remarkable thing. There, people would stand in line for hours. I mean, hours.
Mm-hmm. To get their eyes
in
checked.
In the heat, to get their eyes checked by me. I was giving eye exams, which was...
That's when I brought up the picture that it was Steve Bertrand and a young little toddler-type person.
There's some beautiful
which we
kids.
Didn't really picture you as a kid person.
Yeah, I love kids, absolutely.
I know.
So, and then they go on to see doctors after I would give them sort of the chart test. But, you know... You don't think of it as much as people up here have chances to donate their eyeglasses. Just do it and go to, you know, you can send them to the Lions Club, the Rotarians, wherever. I mean, it was just remarkable to be there where these people who did not see well and now all of a sudden could.
And they're very appreciative, I'm imagining, right?
So appreciative.
Sure. They don't
and,
take
you know,
it for granted.
And
or
you guys,
foster granted
something
in this
case, I didn't
Wendy.
Think, that's not funny. They were waiting for sunglasses.
They were.
I mean, here they are in Mexico, and they don't have access or can't afford sunglasses.
So if you find, excuse me, but if you find old glasses in your drawer, which I have, and they're as big as Harry Carey's because those were very popular back then, I can just give those away. What happens
Absolutely.
To them?
They'll go to someone that'll check the prescription for them, and then they'll be donated. It might be to someone in the U.S. or it might be to someone
in
Mexico. The other thing is that I didn't realize we're just reading glasses. You know, when you get to a certain age, you can't read anymore. Well, think if that goes and you don't go to the CVS to pick up reading glasses.
You can't read anymore.
You lose your ability to read.
That's
so
awful.
So I'm just coming home and, you know, just go through your drawer, find some glasses, find some place to donate them wherever you donate them because it just really makes a difference with people.
Well, it was nice of you to do all that.
I think I got a lot more out of it than they did.
Oh. Why are you so snippy if you're so nice inside?
I'm not that snippy.
Not today.
No, he's not.
No.
Come on.
Poor Pete McMurray hasn't seen you in a while.
I feel bad about that. I don't know where that came from. I'm a little tired.
He left here in tears.
I've
never seen him cry before. Today was the first time I saw him cry.
He hasn't smelled like fish in years.
I had to look on your Facebook page because I missed you and your little two-minute interview commercials. I was like, hey, there's Steve Bertrand.
Yeah. We played some of them twice, because we missed you.
No,
so
I appreciate that.
That's all right.
So
welcome
Financial
back.
Engines. Thank you.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break, and then when we come back, an iconic Chicago radio station is changing hands. We're all a little bit shocked. We'll discuss that next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, do we have time to discuss this, or do we...
Yeah.
I hope we do.
Well, we do have an EAS test that I didn't study for.
Oh.
And I believe there's a national tornado warning / test that's going on statewide, which may have happened.
So this is where people would get texts or some sort of notification saying that there's a tornado in the area when in reality there isn't one. It's just a test, right?
Yeah, I know, but I didn't get the text.
Oh.
All right.
Let me see if I did. I did not either.
So I don't know when that's happening.
All right.
We'll let you know. It's not for reals, though.
No, just pretend. Just a fun one. Just a fake fun one.
It's not that fun.
All right, so The Loop, which for years and years and years...
On The Loop. Matt Bisbee.
Yeah. Was the... If you wanted to rock and you wanted to roll, you
I
would go
to
The
both.
Loop. This was the first radio station you worked at. It was the first radio station I worked at. It was... what an honor it was to even listen to them, much less be on their airwaves, and they have been sold.
Yes.
to Legacy Chicago. The Legacy Chicago Rock Station, The Loop, 97.9. Now, they used to be an all-German station, and they were 97.999. Remember them? They were fun. Used to listen to them. Has been sold to California-based Christian Broadcast Educational Media Foundation for $21.5 million.
How much?
$21.5 million.
Why couldn't we have come up with that? Like, just the people who used to work at The Loop. There's a lot of us.
That's a big dollar
Pete
amount.
Pete McMurray would have thrown
Pete
in
McMurray
some
could have afforded it, but the rest
the Hey
of
Buddy
us,
Fund.
Right. That's what they would have called it.
Sure, and I'm the bad guy.
It's just hard to imagine that station not being in existence. I mean, it'll still exist, but it won't be a rock and roll station, of course. It'll be a Christian broadcasting station, right? That's what we'll hear on there.
Yeah, now my first real paid job was at a Christian AM ethnic station in Northbrook, on Dundee Road and Sanders, maybe.
You almost seem tentative.
I'm not sure, but WEAW, and we played Christian rock. Well, I did. Michael W. Smith, Stryper.
Yeah.
We never did EAS tests, which we're about to do right here, I'm very excited to do this right now on WGN. Were you playing, is that a keyboard that you, are you in charge of making the tones?
Here's my idea for the station buying The Loop. You call the station WEAS, and you just play EAS tests. You do old ones, you do new ones. People call in, and they request their favorite ones, and you just play those 24 hours a day. I think it would work.
We had a lot of fun at The Loop. The Loop radio station was all the rage here in Chicago. I would say even, did you grow up in Manuka, Steve? Was it Manuka that he grew up?
If not Manuka, somewhere in the area, one of the suburbs of Manuka.
And the signal of The Loop, I would imagine, went all the way over there.
Because without a doubt.
Rock and roll, you know, that was their number, 312-591-ROCK, 591-ROLL, it still is their number.
So popular that they had their own shop with loopware and things, loop paraphernalia.
Oh, yeah, the Loop store.
Where was that? It was
Navy Pier.
Was it Navy Pier? Or was
North
it
Pier.
North Pier. It was in North Pier.
That's where it was.
Yeah. So all kinds of t-shirts and anything you wanted, beach towels with the logo on it.
Loopstock was a show that was put on. Johnny and the Leisure Suits. Buzz Kilman played with Johnny. Kevin Matthews and Ed Zeppelin played. Mm-hmm. Danny Bonaducci did something. Mm-hmm. It was really fun. It was, I think, at Poplar Creek. I don't know that you were there
I
yet.
I wasn't with the station at that time.
But Danny Bonaducci was there, and that's how you and I met, kind of through Danny.
Yeah. I would still say that one of the strangest, like, you know how people in radio will be at one station, and then they'll decide, I'll try my luck at another station. I would say that Eddie Schwartz's move from this station, from WGN to The Loop, is still one of the most strange moves in the history of radio, Chicago radio anyway.
It just goes to show you that Larry Wirt can talk anybody into anything. I don't know if Jimmy DeCastro was there at that particular time at The Loop.
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
I think that was Larry's baby.
Well, yeah, I think Larry was behind it, but I think Jimmy was there at the time. But it was a very, because Eddie was so ensconced in the late night show here.
Yep.
And they just said,
yes, I was, Bill.
Wouldn't it be interesting?
I loved Eddie.
To move him over there.
I went to his funeral.
Yeah.
I had never been to a Jewish funeral before, and it was Bruce Wolf, actually, another former Loop employee, helped me figure out what to do because I didn't know. You throw dirt on the ground over the casket.
Very
it was
symbolic.
Met Eddie's brother and his niece, and it was really beautiful.
Yeah.
It really was. Poor Eddie.
So it's very strange to think that staple of the radio community will no longer be broadcasting rock and roll music. That's very peculiar. So they went back and forth a couple times, right, between rock music and then kind of a talk format and then back to rock and then back to a little bit of talk and then at some point decided we'll mix it up.
Well, I mean, it was like comedy talk. It was like morning shows all day long, and that's where you and I hooked up.
Yeah.
I was there strictly playing music on the FM side. And I loved doing that. I really did. But then when Howard Stern came to that radio station, again, Larry Wirt.
Yeah.
And Jack Silver and all these people. And Howard Stern, that was his first intro to Chicago radio, was he was on AM 1000.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Stern was there, and then it was really morning shows the whole day.
Yeah.
And then the FM was music, and I did the live news inserts on Howard's show, and then did news with Kevin Matthews.
I don't know if you remember, but we had a strange song count. Like in radio stations, what they do is a lot of times the program director will meet with the talent and they'll say, I want 6 songs an hour, I want 8 songs an hour. And Matt Bisbee was our boss at the time. And you asked him, what will our song count be? And he put his eyes up in the air and he went, play a song every once in a while.
Because it was focused on the conversation.
Right.
Which is right. What WGN is now, too. I mean, always has been, but...
We should play a song every once in a while, though, just to show people that, you know, music still exists.
And as a tribute to the Loop radio station.
Right. So every now and then you'll get a song, but not often, but once in a while.
I do remember that.
It's not a lot to ask.
Rick Kempfer, who actually started, he was Stephen Gary's producer for a while, who wasn't, actually. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of producers they went through. And then Rick Kempfer also worked overnights on the weekends. We would do a tag team. I would get off the air, and he would go on the air doing the FM music. And he's put together this unbelievable tribute to The Loop. Rest in peace, The Loop, 1977 through 2018. He reports on Robert Feeder's announcement that everybody woke up to this morning, that The Loop radio station will be no more. But if you go to rickkempfer.blogspot.com, and you can just Google him, he's on Facebook, he put together a really sweet little compilation of, here, let me just read this. Over the years, this is Rick Kempfer speaking, I've interviewed nearly all of my former colleagues. Here's just one quote about The Loop from each of them that worked there during the station's heyday from 1979 to 1995. I'm proud to call all of them my friends. Artie Kennedy, a technical producer for Johnny B, is mentioned. Bill Leff, I don't know who that is.
I don't know what became of him.
No, but there's a quote from you. You want to hear your quote?
Yeah.
Here's what Bill said about The Loop.
Some cartoon character mentioned at some point?
I don't know.
Then I don't know if it's from me.
Whenever Danny Bonaducci came to town to do stand-up, he'd have me open for him, which was strange because when I was little, I used to watch him on television and tell my parents that someday we'd be friends. Strange, huh?
That's true. That is true. I know that sounds made up.
No, it
doesn't.
But
whenever he'd be on TV, I'd say to my mom and dad, I bet he and I are friends and we work together someday. And my parents would just smile, you know, that kind of scared smile, like, oh, yeah, I bet that'll happen someday.
I saw that look when I told my mom I'd marry Donny Osmond. So I know that look.
But both of our dreams came true.
Right. Anyway, Danny got hired to work at The Loop. I had been doing stand-up for 10 years, and my wife and I wanted to have kids, and I didn't want to travel anymore. So I told Danny that if anything ever opened up, please keep me in mind. He instantly went to his bosses, Larry Wirt and Matt Bisbee, and they paired me up with Wendy Snyder. Brilliant move.
Mm.
That's when you used to like me.
Yep, that was a long time ago.
Brendan Sullivan was a producer for Johnny B. Bruce Wolf is mentioned in this. Bob Stroud's playing Stacks of Wax from the back of the racks.
Well, you must be in there too.
Yes.
What do you say? Is your story like mine?
Buzz. I just want to mention some of the people, and we got to take a break. Can I tell you it on the other side?
Yeah.
Buzz Kilman has a quote. Kara Caravu, who started at The Loop, Carlo Leonardo, the late great, Cheryl Ray Stout, covered sports for The Loop, AM 1000, Chet Copic, all right, Cindy Gatziolis, the late great Cindy Gatziolis, Dan McNeil, Danny Bonaducci has a quote, Dave Benson, the late great Eddie Schwartz, Ed Till, you may not like what he says.
Ed Till.
But he'll say it anyway.
Yeah.
Greg Salk, that's who hired me there. Harry Tynowitz, who was different parts of different shows on The Loop AM.
Sure.
Jack Silver, program director of AM 1000. Jeff Hoover, who's now on WGN Morning News. Jeff Schwartz, Jimmy Mack, McInerney, my husband. John Swanson, producer for Eric. Kevin Matthews.
And Kathy for a while.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
No. Kevin Matthews.
I had to turn in my t-shirts. I can't wear my Eric and Kathy t-shirts anymore. I feel dirty.
Laura Whittick, Les Grobstein, The Grobber, Leslie Kiling, Lisa Dominique, Matt Bisbee, Mitch Michaels, Cher Duda Cruz, Mitch Rosen. Go see it. It's rickkempferblogspot.com, and I'll read my fabulous quote. Neither one of ours are very good.
Nah, we didn't know someday that it be used against us in a court of law. All right, news is next, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Welcome back to Steve Bertrand. We've missed him. Mm-hmm. We're going to miss the Loop radio station because when does that go under?
I don't know if it gives a date or not. I didn't see a date on there, but they're going to be, it's like a Christian broadcasting company, right? Who's taking them over?
Yeah, I know that I worked
So it'll still be the Loop logo, but it'll be two Eucharists where the O's used to be. It's an easy transition when you think about it.
Is the P going to be a chalice?
Yes. Yes.
And an L will be like that fish sign.
Yeah. It's easy. It's not that big.
Although
of a
it'll
switch.
Look like the poop.
Oh, maybe. They might want to look into that.
Rick Kempfer has put together a little, he's interviewed a lot of people. He writes for many publications, and I can't just go to his website. That'll tell you everything. He's put together comments from everyone he's interviewed who he worked with at the Loop. For instance, Robin Baumgarten. She was the morning anchor. She is the morning news anchor right now on WGN TV. She's awesome, and she's real, Bill.
What a nice climb for her.
She was Johnny B's traffic reporter.
Yeah.
And then went to GNTV to be in the helicopter.
Yeah.
And now is Chicago's most beloved woman.
Yes.
Now that Oprah's gone, Robin Baumgarten is my
Picked
new
up the mantle.
Oprah.
Yeah. Yep. Well deserved.
Scott Dirks, the overnight guy at the Loop. He plays blues. He's a great harmonica player. Stan Lawrence, he contributed regularly to the Stephen Gary show. He had a show with Rick Kempfer on the air called Ebony and Ivory. He worked with Seika.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about sex. And was lastly teamed with Terry Armour. Who was
CKG.
A columnist for the Chicago Tribune and was a great guy and the late great.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Gibson, overnight jock. I used to follow him all the time. He now does work with Styx, the Styx
band.
Oh,
yeah, band. We had him on once. I remember that.
Vince Argento was another Stephen Gary producer, went on to work for John Landecker, and Wendy Snyder got her start at the Loop.
Oh,
as an FM jock.
What a sad story that one is, isn't it?
Yeah, she later worked with Kevin Matthews, Jonathan Brandmeier, and both Stephen Gary. And here's my quote.
What are you saying?
Here I was, 23 years old, working at the same station as Jonathan Brandmeier, Buzz Killman, Stephen Gary, Kevin Matthews, Bob Stroud, Bobby Scafish, Patty Hayes. I grew up listening to many of these people, and now I was working with them. Too cool. Later on, throw in a Danny Bonaducci, Chet Kopic, Eddie Schwartz, 85 Bears Tom Theron, Keith Van Horn, artist Tony Fitzpatrick, Stan Lawrence, and Rick Kempfer. It really was a blast back then. One big happy family, and of course, the Loop is where I met my future husband, Jimmy Mac McInerney. No mention of you.
No, there's no mention of me. It's probably for the best.
No, but I got Chet Kopic in, so that.
Thank you. You mentioned everybody.
Matters.
You mentioned the guy who ran the elevators. That's fine.
But now I don't know what the question was.
Tell us everybody at the Loop that meant something to you except for Bill. That was the question they asked you that
Although
day.
You were the last guy I was teamed with
yeah.
and the best guy I was teamed with, and that
you.
Might have been the second question that I answered
that could
from
have been.
Him.
But you know what? To your point right there, for me anyway, I don't know about this for anyone else who worked there. Like, I didn't have any kind of radio background when they paired me off with you there, and it was like playing in an all-star game without ever having a bat in the major leagues. Like, all of a sudden, you looked at the lineup there, and aside from yourself, it was, you know, Jonathan Brandmeier in the morning.
Oh, it was the bigwigs.
Danny and Kevin and Stephen Gary, and you just go, what?
But you came off the bench swinging.
Oh, well, thanks.
I mean, the minute I started working with you, and they paired me with a lot of people. I loved working with Tony Fitzpatrick, but we would fight all the time
yeah.
and on the air.
I know.
I was like his bratty little sister, and he
yeah.
was my annoying big brother.
Yeah. But you know that was their goal, right? it had to have been their goal.
Yeah, and I mean, we loved each other. It's right. Not, you know, but we were truly like siblings and fighting all the time.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore because I don't see him every day.
Right.
And Steve Cochran is also quoted. He worked at The Loop in the mid-90s, which I completely forgot about. His quote was, "The Loop was probably the most fun of any station I worked at because of the incredible lineup. I was there at the tail end of it, but at one point it was Johnny, Kevin, Danny, and me during the day, and just to be part of that was great. To work with Jimmy DeCastro, who really is a genius, and Larry Ward, that was one heck of an experience."
Yeah.
And then those people came here and Cochran got to work again.
Yep. Happy endings for everybody.
I'll miss The Loop, genuinely.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that it's that it will be no longer.
Smoking by the freight elevators.
Yep.
Damn.
Yep. You should, well, I was going to say you should go and have one last puff.
No, but I don't
smoke
anymore.
You're done with that.
I do
good
not
for
smoke.
You. All right, we'll take a break. Unless, did you want to take a call?
Yeah, let's do one.
All right.
This is Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. How's it going? You know, I always thought that the Loop, I used to call The Loop the Camelot of Chicago radio.
Oh, that makes sense.
I mean, at its peak, it hit all of it. I mean, I originally got into it because I got into Steve Dahl when he was on DAI, then he got into The Loop. And then also Johnny B, Steve, Kevin, I mean, everybody was you guys. It was all amazing. Everybody was, you know, Danny Bonaducci.
It was morning shows all day long.
Well, I mean, it was all great stuff and all crazy stuff. And like, just even the background stuff. You guys barely mentioned like what's his name, Matt Bisbee.
Yeah,
he was the voice of the Loop.
The production guy extraordinaire on The Loop.
Oh, amazing! And what killed me though was when my oldest daughter was in college. She dated his son Jack.
Oh, wow!
And I got to meet Matt and stuff. And when I heard she was dating Matt Bisbee's son, I go, "You're dating the spawn of Bisbee?"
The spawn of Bisbee. That's a good band name.
That's a sequel to The Shape of Water, Wendy. If you ever want to see the sequel.
But the first time we got together for dinner one night, we met his parents, and he goes, "Did you call me the spawn of Bisbee?"
Well, Brian, nice sharing memories with you. We appreciate you calling in.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Brian. Also, if you remember, there was a time where you couldn't go through a toll booth, you know, where you throw the 40 cents in at the time, without a Loop sticker being, somebody would paste a Loop sticker on the back of the toll machine.
Yeah, every time. You're right. Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then it is Tech Tuesday. We'll find out from Bridget Carey what's going on in the world of technology. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's a Tech Tuesday. That's what that music means. And CNET senior editor Bridget Carey on the line with us. Bridget, how are you?
Hey, doing good. I'm actually in a taxi right now, coming back from an event I just was covering from Dyson, the vacuum makers. They were showing off a brand new wireless vacuum, and they say that's the future for all their innovation. You know, goodbye cords. They want all of their vacuums from now on to be battery powered. And because they've gotten the engine to be so strong as a upright corded vacuum, that they say, why bother, you know, engineering the other ones, that this is going to be the future. They're still going to make the corded vacuums if you really, you know,
and
want
they'll
that,
be cheaper, but, I bet.
Oh, I hope so, yeah.
I broke down and bought a Dyson vacuum. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I had a coupon to save like $200 at Kohl's.
Wow.
So I bought the vacuum, and it clogs up a lot, and I went on YouTube to look up how to clean it. Oh, my God. It clogs for a second, but then all these pieces come apart. It's made so remarkably that you just get the crap out of it, and that thing sucks like ever. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive, but, you know, the cord always gets in the way. It would be nice to have a cordless Dyson that really sucks.
Your dream is now reality, Wendy.
Is it going to be as much as a house?
You know, I would say these things obviously really aren't cheap. I mean, you're looking at like it's starting at around $600, right? But one of the problems with these cordless ones in the past have been something called battery fade, because, you know, it'll be really strong to start, and then the battery starts making it weaker and weaker. So they say with this model, they've kind of cracked that problem, and you can get about 60 minutes of cleaning. But then, like, who wants to charge another thing? So
yeah.
You're going to want to put it on the wall.
We're out of plugs.
The wall charger.
Yep.
Right, exactly. So if you install this wall mount, that's maybe better, because once it's fully charged, it'll stop charges, doesn't overcharge the battery. I'm like, okay, I could see that being a practical thing because I don't need to be plugging in more things and worrying about what else needs a charge in my life.
Bridget, what about a vacuum drone that would fly over your carpet and clean your carpet by use of lasers?
You know, they are using lasers now. It's funny, but yeah. Everything has a laser now, at least with the robot ones. And they were showing off, too, this, like, air purifier for the home. They're really focused on, like, the whole cleanliness of your home and the air and, you know, carpet, I guess.
Right.
So, and it can tell you in real time when it detects fumes, like any toxic kind of fume, or whatever. And there's a little screen on there. So in real time, you can see that your air is now better. It is something to think about if you live in a smoggy place or even if you're like someone in the home who has a lot of like, I don't know, hairspray and stuff. You know, it'll let you know how the air quality is doing.
Speaking of hairspray, Dyson also makes a blow dryer that's $400.
What?
And
really?
The girl who does my hair, Andrea, uses it. And I said, is this thing really great? And she goes, you know, listen, it's a lot of money, but it really works. It doesn't, you know, ruin your hair. I don't know. Now I'm thinking of getting a Dyson. Now if I can get a Dyson cordless hair dryer.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sold.
I think battery technology is one of the big problems in trying to get the next leap of gadgets. Not to like name drop here, but I did talk to Sir James Dyson about that hair dryer. And he says in the future, like, they really are kind of a battery tech company, if you think about it, because they're working on, like, how do you get the batteries better so the gadgets can be better? And so aside from all the engines and the spinning and the blowing and the sucking, it's also about the battery.
I love gadgets, man. That should be my middle name. I love them. All right, speaking of gadgets, there are shoes you can wear that can set you up with a pizza. I want in.
Oh, yes. There's always a gadget and a gimmick. Pizza Hut has pizza tech shoes. Now, they're like, you know, instead of high tops, they call them pie tops. Yeah.
Woo!
Brilliant.
but on the little tongue of the sneaker, you could press a button and have pizza delivered to you for March Madness. But actually, there's a new version out now that will also pause your TV. It'll work with some cable boxes. This is the kind of thing that shows you how cheap tech has gotten and how easy it is for a company to kind of do it. But I laugh because, hey, our smartphone was designed to get rid of all the extra gadgets, right? We don't need a calculator or a separate camera or a separate this and that anymore because it's all in one phone, really, right? But then here comes tech company or other companies going, hey, I have one product that is designed to do one thing. Like Amazon has these buttons. Here's a button to just buy more Bounty paper towels. Here's a button to just order a pizza. So that's kind of the backwards way of going. It's funny for marketing. It's certainly great for brands, you know, and always have a button for one thing in your home. But we're beyond that, I think. And it just kind of shows how cheap tech has gotten that they could do anything with it.
Bridget, with this, do you have to lock in one particular order and then when you press the button, it just activates that order? You can't change your order around with different ingredients or sizes or anything like that, can you?
Three taps for large, two taps for extra pepperoni. No, you have to lock in on the app. and then you can always change it on the app. So you have like a preset. Domino's does the exact same thing for all of their quirky little gimmicks they do. Domino's is well known for like having like a one touch or voice activated. Or you can tweet to get a pizza by tweeting an emoji of a pizza slice. I've done that before. So if anyone's working on the future of fast tech, sometimes it's pizza companies, oddly enough.
I'm telling you, the apps that they have nowadays make life so much easier. Noodles and Company, when I was at physical therapy for my knee, I could order something on the app while I was waiting for my car to warm up and then pick up dinner for the family. Chipotle's app is so easy. I really love the app.
Well, it is, but then how many apps are you going to have on your phone? Your phone starts to have real estate issues and with everyone having their own apps. So it's a little bit of a battle on, like, of course, your favorite foods and your favorite local restaurants. You know, you'll definitely use that, but it all depends on, you know, are they going to use a third party to have it all sync together? And then there's the whole issue of paying. I know a lot of apps will work with the iPhone and Apple Pay where I could just pay by, you know, hitting a button and the Face ID reads my face and boom, I just paid for something, you know? So I think that's also another way they're integrating to stand out.
It is really easy to spend your money nowadays. days. Really, you just easy. Touch a button and it's like, oh, I just bought that. I was ordering. I had a bunch of things at Overstock in my cart, like $900 worth of rugs because I couldn't decide what I wanted. And I accidentally hit submit order. $900.
And that went through?
And you can cancel it almost immediately, okay, and you get an alert saying, you know, your cancellation did go through. But it's like way too easy.
Yeah.
Way too easy.
When you have a toddler in your house like I do and you have an Amazon product, my toddler hit this little button and starts talking babble because she doesn't really speak yet. So it was, what did you say this morning? It was like, ooey, ooey. And then it's like, add it to your cart. I'm like, what did you buy? And I go into the cart. And it was a hoodie.
Oh.
I put it in my cart.
Was it her size?
Hoodie. It was men's, so I think it's a little large for her. But
are parents not naming their daughters? Do you know, Bridget, are parents purposely not naming their daughters Alexa so that if they're talking to their child, they're not accidentally ordering things and not thinking about it?
Oh, man. I wouldn't be surprised if you started seeing more kids being serious, but like it inspires them. But you can, if you do have a child named Alexa. The good news is you can change it, so it'll answer to a different command word. Like you could say, okay, computer, and feel like you're Scotty from Star Trek, and then, you know.
Oh, that's
or Hal from 2001.
Yeah, that'd be better. I like that.
That's cool. Well, Bridget, thank you so very much. Have fun looking at the Dyson products, and let me know how they suck or roll or whatever.
Will do.
Thanks, Bridget. It's Bridget Carey from CNET. That's your website to visit, CNET.com. We'll take a quick break, then some news. Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. Welcome back. Nice
Ditto.
To have you.
Ditto from me, Steve.
I'm happy to be back with the two of you.
We were
with everyone, really.
Everybody, sure.
We were talking yesterday off the air, Bill. Parkland, Florida, we had Liza Long on, who was giving us a peek into the mind of what a parent of a shooter, a school shooter, goes through. And we were talking about Parkland off the air, and I asked you if you heard about one of the teachers that was being touted as a hero, but wasn't really.
This was a math teacher, right?
Yeah. And so finding the story, Florida students say a hero teacher was really a coward who left them to die. Here's what happened. At least two students who survived the chaos of the Florida shooting last month are challenging the narrative that surrounds a teacher hailed as a hero after this rampage. This is from MSN.com. Math teacher Jim Gard was credited with protecting students in his classroom in the horrifying moments on February 14th after a teen gunman unleashed a fusillade of bullets at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. Everybody had said this teacher saved many lives, but students Josh Gallagher and Connor Dietrich have said something different on Twitter. Josh said Gard, quote, called himself a hero and the media portrayed him as a hero, when in reality, it's completely the opposite. Josh said he was in Gard's class when the fire alarm went off, and that's what happened originally. Mm-hmm. The students filed out of the room, and then they heard gunshots in the hallway. About 15 of them froze before racing to go back into the classroom.
Sure.
Gard, the teacher, G-A-R-D, had locked the door and refused to let him back in. I can't even believe this. According to this kid, we were stuck in the hall for 4 total minutes, ducking and in fear for our lives, until a teacher Josh didn't even know let them in their classroom.
Yeah.
So Gard wouldn't let him in their classroom. He locked the door. That was it. And some other teacher let them in. Gard left 75% of his students out in the hallway to be slaughtered. How does that happen?
Well, all right.
Gard gave a phone. Can I just say, Gard gave a phone interview, because I do know that there's protocol and I know that there are things you need to do.
Right.
The teacher, Gard, gave a phone interview, Jim Gard, to CBS Miami while still holed up in his classroom with some of his students less than 2 hours after the shooting spree. The group had been awaiting the all clear from police officers conducting a classroom by classroom search. Josh noted that Gard was interviewed by media multiple times, has been acclaimed a hero, and Josh said he's nothing but a coward. He has re-victimized the students he left out of his class by calling himself a hero, and they want the truth to be known.
All right. So please understand, I'm not defending him because I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly what was going through his mind or anybody's mind at the time. But I've often wondered, not just in this shooting incident, but in similar incidents, what you do if you're in the care of the students, if you're a teacher and you're making split second decisions, and you close a door and you lock a door, and then maybe you can't see exactly what's going on in the hallway, but you see shooting, and you say to yourself, do I want to potentially risk opening a door and letting a shooter in? You know, just because somebody knocks and says, you know, we're running. I know you want to believe that that's true, but you could also say it could be somebody saying that who's potentially the shooter.
Except he knew his class. He led his class into the hallway, so he would recognize the students that were in his class.
You would hope so.
And he would say, oh, we hear shots. Guys, come back in here.
Right.
You know, you heard people, there was some ROTC guy who was out on the field conducting drills, and they had stopped early.
Right.
And he gathered his group, and this is a student. He gathered his people and moved them to the safety of a room.
See, I totally get that too, but I think that because of the chaos that's happening at the moment, it's not the level-headed version of you making those decisions. There's so much going on so fast and so unexpected. And I'm not defending him, but I've always wondered in cases like this, people always say the right protocol is to lock the door. You know, barricade yourself in, cover up the window so they can't see who's inside the class. But then I think, but if I'm a teacher and I hear knocking, you got to let me in. There's somebody chasing me with a gun. You don't know what's real anymore.
Yeah, but
he
led the kids out in the class, in the hallway.
Right.
And then you kind of look to your teacher to go, okay, now what?
Right.
And now students return to classes following the shooting. Another student, Connor Dietrich, expressed similar emotions on Twitter. And this is what he said. As one of the kids left in the hallway, I want people to understand how terrifying and defenseless I personally felt, Connor tweeted. The person I had to rely on left us to die, and that's not okay. Now, Jim Gard expressed shock at these accusations. He told the South Florida Sun Sentinel that he followed protocol that requires to keep doors locked during an active shooter drill or real emergency. He said six students followed him back into the room. That seems like a small amount of kids if he's got a class of, say, 22,
right,
and he leads them out in the hall, and then it's like, oh, man, they're shooting. Come on, guys, let's get back in. You'd think he'd lead them back in the room before he ran in first.
How much time elapsed between him letting them out into the hall and them trying to get back into the class?
The kids that are disputing his heroism are saying they walked out, heard gunshots, and he turned around and went back in, and they were left out there for 4 minutes. Which I think we know now that's how long the shooting took place. According to Gard, he said, I looked back down the hall and no one was around. No one, he said. You have to close the door. That's protocol. We have no choice. He said he and the six students were huddled in the dark when they heard banging on the door. He said he is prohibited from opening the door but did walk over to it. The banging, however, had stopped. Fast forward to Sunday when the parents came back for an open house. Gard told the Sun Sentinel, all of a sudden this kid comes over and starts screaming at me. Then his father started screaming at me. This is insane. I wasn't there. I don't know.
I think maybe the people to ask are the kids that got back in the classroom.
Those six?
Yeah, the six, and find out what their take on that moment was. But again, there's just so much going on at that moment. You just, no one's thinking rationally. You want to think you could, but...
Yeah, but you look to the teachers, and I know that teachers really should get paid more, and they really are responsible for shaping the minds of all of our kids.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot to ask, but I'm telling you, if something happened here, I would look to you for advice.
Wise move.
Well, because I would be freaking out. I am not good in emergency situations. So you're a kid in high school.
Right.
You expect your teacher to hold it together.
You would hope.
And what do these kids have to gain to tweet that this guy is not a hero?
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it?
They're not going to just try and take this guy down unless...
Right, unless it's warranted.
It's true.
Sure, sure. All right, there are calls. Do we want to take a break first and then some calls? All right, 312-981-7200, your thoughts on this. Was the teacher a hero, or did he do the worst thing possible in the situation? Give us a call or a text. We'll take those next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Telling you the story about a teacher that was being hailed as a hero, a math teacher in Florida, But now we're hearing some conflicting reports from some of his students.
Jim Gard is his name. Math teacher Jim Gard was credited with protecting students, but there are two students that have come forth that said he was not a hero. He was a coward. He went out in the hallway. They heard shots. He went back in his room, locked the door, did not let them in as they were knocking. Those two students were out there for 4 minutes. Ultimately went into another teacher's room.
Yeah.
Susan has called us and wants to talk about this. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you? I'm a teacher, and I tell you, this really bothers me. This is the protocol that we're given. When there's a lockdown drill, you're supposed to grab whatever kids are right outside your door, pull them in, and then you have to lock the door, and you're not supposed to open it for anybody. And whether or not, you know, when you're in that situation, you do what you're told to do, or you break protocol and you grab students from the, you know, what are you supposed to do? The best direction we have is what the police tell us is you're supposed to lock the door and not open it again.
So, Susan, if you suggest to whoever your supervisors are or to the police, if you say, what about a judgment call? Well, I understand the importance of locking my classroom, but what if I hear somebody who's in total distress and I can save their life? Do you even bring that up, or
right.
do you just do it?
Well, I would just, in that situation, which you hope never happens, that's what I would, I hope I would do the right thing and save the kids' lives, but there are people who follow the rules, you know, based on what they're told is the best thing to do. And I don't blame him for doing what he did. He followed the directions he was given. I feel really badly for him that people are. I mean, think about how he feels. He did what he was told to do.
Now, I don't, this is the wiggle room that I'm not sure about. Now, according to one of the students, he was in this guy's class, Guard's class. The fire alarm went off. Students filed out into the hallway. They heard gunshots immediately.
Yeah.
15 of them froze, and then they kind of raced back to the classroom, but he had locked the door and refused to let them in. I get the locking the door, but it just seems like a teacher would say...
But how do you know how far down the hall those kids were and how, you know, you don't know because you weren't there and you're not in the situation.
I understand
and
that.
I'm not saying that he did the right thing or the wrong thing. He did he followed the directions he was given. And it's not really fair. I don't know anything about him. I don't know.
I agree, Susan.
You know, yeah.
And we're basing everything on what these two kids said. I guess I'm just thinking, you know, if I'm in school and a fire alarm goes off, I don't know. I guess in high school you don't do single file like you do in elementary school where everybody's together and then you go, guys, come
exactly.
on back in. They did probably
no,
all go their don't. Own way.
Right. And think about the number of students in that school. It's a huge
yeah.
school. And how do you get them back, those kids? And the whole thing with the fire drill is really freaking me out as a teacher, I got to tell you, because I remember when the police came and gave us a demonstration, you know, they come in and during our professional development and tell us what to do and here are the situations. And one of the things they said was the shooters will likely pull the fire alarm, but they didn't have a solution for that. You know, it's like, what do you do if they know that that's going to get everybody out in the halls? I worry about kids out at recess. I worry about kids every time we go to an assembly.
I am sorry you are going through this. You have enough on your mind being a teacher and trying to teach these kids, let alone to be their protectors. It's a tough position to be in.
It is. I mean, I'm not sure 30 years ago this is what I signed up for, but... That's where we are.
Can I ask a quick question, Susan? When we were kids, we would do fire drills every other month or every 3 months, and no one took them very seriously. When schools today do active shooter drills, do the kids take it pretty seriously?
More now than they did when we first started doing them.
Yeah.
But I did one with kids last year, and they were all giggling and stuff. I said, you know, if this was a real thing, you might be...
Yeah.
You know what? And these are older kids I'm saying it to, you know, 7th and 8th graders, that you might be dead if you were giggling, because they would know you were here.
Right.
You have to be quiet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they, I imagine with all of this in the news now that they feel much more gravity towards that situation, but...
You know, somebody has texted, and I think this is a really good point. This means we need more drills so we all know how to react in these cases.
We do. We do need more drills, and we need them with different situations. You know, I know that there are some places where they say, like they do fire drills and they block off part of the school because, you know, if that part of the school is on fire, the door that you regularly go out might not be available. So
right.
You need to go a different way. So you need to have different scenarios so that you can practice different things. And I don't know, the school day needs to be 10 hours long so we can do
enough time for everything. Right.
To educate.
Right.
What do you think about metal detectors going into schools? Would that bother you, Susan?
It wouldn't bother me, but I don't know how long you think it's going to take kids to get into the building in the morning. I mean,
right.
how many doors you're going to have them? Who are you going to have there at, you know, monitoring the kids coming in, going through the metal detectors? I mean, if you've got a school with 900 kids in it and you've got two metal detectors, it's going to take how long for kids to get into the building filing in through two metal detectors?
But you just start thinking about how easy it is to just have one kid have something in his backpack and come in. That's what's scary to me.
It is scary. But in Parkland, the kid was a student there, so he knew everything he needed to know in order to do what he did, because he was a student there. He knew how to get around.
And what time was the best time to do it? Yeah, it's really sad when you think about it. God, this world has changed. Susan, be safe.
Yep. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan.
Guys, have a great day.
You too.
We have to start saying to teachers now, thank you for your service. I'm not kidding.
I know. And how sad is it, necessary but sad, that active shooter drills have been normalized? Think about when you were a kid, a kindergarten kid, a first grade kid, a second grade kid, wouldn't that just scare the daylights out of you that you were having an active shooter drill? I mean, I know it's become necessary, but it's just so sad that that's normal now.
I got scared. You know, you always were supposed to have a fire drill, a fire plan at your house.
Yeah, right.
And I was like too freaking out, like I couldn't do it. And they're like, come on, we got to figure out what, I can't do it. Just tell me where to go. So when I was little, I mean, I can only imagine that's what these kindergartners, although, Bill, these kids have been forced to grow up a lot quicker than we did.
That's so true. Yeah.
God.
All right, we will take a break. We've got news and then there's more show, so stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are here for you on WGN. Did we have our major tornado drill today?
I think that took place earlier this morning, yeah.
I didn't get a text.
No text?
Huh.
You know what my favorite kind of lawsuit is, Wendy, of all time? My favorite lawsuit is the frivolous lawsuit. This is where you say to yourself...
There are many of those to choose from these days.
I ordered Sprite, and I wanted a 16-ounce Sprite, and they only gave me 14 ounces, so I'm going to sue them. I love that kind of a lawsuit, the frivolous lawsuit. Tell me if you think this qualifies. A passenger is suing Southwest Airlines for mental anguish after his flight landed at the wrong airport. Now, right there, let's think about what we have so far. A man has taken a flight and expects to land at a very specific location, a very specific airport. And then, for whatever reason, I'll get into that in a little bit, it lands at another airport.
That would give me anguish.
Right. There would be some anguish, but would it be enough for you to say, oh, I have to sue these people?
Well, if I was coming home, say from L.A., trying to get home to Midway,
right,
and I ended up in Cleveland,
right,
boy, would my arms be tired?
You would, right? You'd have tired arms and mental anguish.
Well, that would irk me, but I don't know that you'd. I'd just try to get a free flight or something.
Well, Urkel, what if I told you that the airport that they landed at was just 9 miles away from the airport that he thought they were going to land at? Would that still bring you the mental anguish that originally befell you?
9 miles?
9 miles away.
No.
Flight 4013 was scheduled to fly from
Chicago. Say it like a pilot, will you?
40139er. They say,
but I mean,
niner,
they always sound like they're from Texas.
Flight 4013, like that, go. Was scheduled to fly from Chicago's Midway International Airport. Hey, I've been there. That's the one by White Castle. And landed in the Branson Airport in Missouri. This took place in January of 2014. However, the plane landed at M. Graham Clark Downtown Airport, which is located 9 miles away from the Branson Airport. While a plane mistakenly landing at the wrong airport is alarming, the key difference between the two airports is that Branson's airport runway is 7,140 feet long, while M. Graham Clark's is 3,738 feet long. M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong. This has all of a sudden become a math problem. I didn't think this would happen, but this has become a math problem. Upon landing on the much shorter runway, passengers reported that they felt a hard brake and were thrown harshly forward with bags spilling from the overhead compartments. This according to Business Insider. Passenger Troy Haynes' lawsuit against the airline, Southwest, by the way, claims that he was immediately struck with fear and anxiety over potentially crashing.
Well, yeah, that would bother me more than the location.
No one wants that.
Yeah. That's mental anguish. If you were thrown forward and bags were falling all over the place.
I've been on a couple of flights where this sort of thing has happened.
Really?
I've never landed at a different... Well, no, once I did land at a wrong airport, but it never occurred to me I should sue... Look at the anguish I'm suffering. I need to sue somebody.
You would just go, ugh, this is wholly inconvenient.
This is awful. Right. I just assume on a daily basis that the day will bring me some mental anguish. That it's some...
You're
somewhere,
with me how many hours a day? So that's a given.
Right. So at some point, for 3 hours, there's going to be a period of mental anguish. But then everything will clear up around 1 o'clock. He says, this is again Troy Haynes, who, by the way, I tried to contact and couldn't track him down. He says he developed a fear of flying in the months that followed. He claims he also... Now, that's piling on to some extent, don't you think? And I'm not inside this guy's head. But you could say that about almost anything traumatic that happens to you, no matter what happens. You know, you could say, you know how every once in a while ice falls off a building and hits somebody? You could say, I'm going to sue the city because I can't even walk across the street anymore. I have so much mental anguish that an icicle is going to hit me and kill me. I can't do it. I must sue the city.
I must say.
The city's in trouble. He says he developed a fear of flying in the months afterwards. He claims he also had to change jobs at a substantially diminished salary since he was unable to fly for work anymore.
Oh, that seems weird.
That's a little extra too, isn't it? According to the petition filed by Haynes' attorney, several key factors contributed to the flight's incorrect landing. The petition states that the captain had never been to Branson, and that the first officer had only flown once. Is that relevant? I'm not sure.
Well, saying he's inexperienced.
Yeah, I get. Well, all right.
Should have better landings.
Yeah, maybe. Although the training to be the captain of an airliner or first officer, the training must be very... They don't just say, do you fly a lot? You like to fly? Well, you can do this.
It's not like a teenager getting your license.
No, even that. Think about the hours that go into that. So it's got to be magnified.
My kid got his license and shouldn't have. I'll just tell you that right now.
Really? Yeah?
Yes.
Despite all this, the crew decided to make a visual approach to the airport rather than relying on instruments. And the first officer was not wearing his glasses.
Come on. This sounds stupid.
They're just digging for anything. They're just throwing anything.
He was up late last night because he got in a fight with his girlfriend.
They're throwing that kind of stuff in.
That's ridiculous.
The investigation conducted by the National Transportation Safety Board in 2014 was reported to the USA Today, confirmed all of these factors. At the time, Southwest suspended both pilots. We can confirm that the pilots have been removed from active flying pending this investigation. This according to a Southwest spokesperson who told all this to USA Today all the way back in 2014. We continue to support the NTSB in their investigation. Southwest also made an effort to compensate all 124 passengers on board directly after the event. What would you make in compensation if your flight landed 9 miles away, also at an airport? It wasn't an emergency landing on a highway or a strip of land somewhere. It was at an airport. So what would the compensation for that be?
A free rental car?
To the other airport.
Yeah. That's
you get to take an Alamo What do you want? You want the Jeep Cherokee? You get to take it to the other.
We'll upgrade you.
Right.
We'll pay
free
you
upgrades.
Know, yeah. Everyone we'll charge upgrade. You for a compact and give you the
right.
Grand Cherokee.
Right. They say, Southwest says, we have since reached out to each customer directly to apologize, to refund their tickets, and to provide future travel credit as a gesture of goodwill for their inconvenience, which seems fair.
It does seem fair.
It all seems fair. But Troy Haynes, not happy with this. He is suing them for mental anguish. It does not put a dollar amount on how much the lawsuit is for, but I almost think this would qualify as a frivolous lawsuit, wouldn't it?
Yes. Now we go to Judge Ted. Hi, Judge Ted. How are you?
Your Honor. I'm
the bailiff.
You're available?
No, I'm bailiff. The bailiff.
But we can make arrangements.
Shut up.
All right.
What do you think?
What I think is that this guy's never going to win this lawsuit because math problems and wrong destination, all that aside, mental anguish for a short runway, that's landing at Midway every day.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
So, come on. I mean, we'd all be in line.
Frivolous.
Right. There's exactly. times at Midway, it seems like you could reach down, because the White Castle is so close, you could almost reach down and grab a hamburger as you're landing at Midway. It's that close. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, Ted. We appreciate it.
All right, let's take a quick break, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you've met John Williams, right?
Yes.
Nice man. Very nice man. He was talking about something yesterday that really resonated with me, because I experienced this a week ago. But it was fun to see how he dealt with it. There's a tea place in our building right across the hall from us, really, when you walk in. I don't know the name of it. I've only been in there once.
Argo Summit Tea.
Argo Summit Tea.
It's just Argo.
Why did you call it Argo Summit Tea?
Because Argo and Summit go together in the suburbs.
Oh, they do.
Argo
that's
Summit
right.
High School.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
so,
Argo Tea.
So you call Argo Tea Argo Summit
Sometimes.
Tea? Because that's fun. All right. So they evidently have this policy in place now. I don't know if you got to hear me. Talked about this yesterday. By which they do not accept cash.
I never have cash on me, Bill. I know you get $20 a day. That's your allowance. You are all about cash.
Well,
I never have cash on me.
I bring this up because twice in the last month, right next to my health club in Evanston, there's a hamburger place that I used to eat at every once in a while called Epic Burger. They're
yeah,
really good.
Yeah, I saw this in the
Epic
news.
Burger?
No.
So they also, there's
yeah.
a sign on there, and I don't remember how it's worded, but they let you know.
We no longer take cash. That's how it's worded.
It's essentially that. I mean, they jazzed it up a little bit. They made it sound, you know, remember when cash meant something? Well, it doesn't anymore. Fool, you know, something like that. And twice in the last month, when I've thought to myself after working out, I'll grab lunch here, it's right next door, I haven't, because I as you pointed out, I have $20 on me every day. I can do whatever I want with it.
You don't have a debit card?
I have a credit card, but I prefer not to use. I'd rather use cash. That's been the thing. Is
cash is king.
Cash is king. If
not anymore,
cash,
guys.
Buy stuff. But now, what has happened where you can't buy a hamburger? You know, what's a hamburger? $4?
I'll gladly
$5?
Pay you Tuesday. Did you use that?
To set up Apple Pay. You could do this.
Yeah,
it
you could,
really,
and then you have
you.
Your phone.
Yes.
You have
so then I just swipe my phone. I go to a website, and I swipe something on the phone at the cash register,
yeah.
and the transaction is
yeah,
done,
you just
right?
set it up.
And you get a little check, and it's done, and you've paid.
You hook up a credit card to it.
Or a debit card.
But see, I can't say this without saying it plainly. That
you can
it seems
do it,
like
though.
It's free at the moment, but then when the bill comes at the end of the month, you go, wow, I just charged $11,000 worth of stuff this month. What have I done? Like, I'm an impulsive shopper. I'm
I know.
A very impulsive
I get
buyer.
It. So you like to keep track of things.
I like to know.
It's hard to keep track when you're just...
When you just swipe
fake.
Something.
Okay, you know what? I'm so old school. Like, I use my app, my phone for using a debit card, but
yeah.
I'll still write it in my checkbook. And so I know what my running tally is because
yeah.
I'm so old school.
Oh,
like that.
That's
I still,
smart.
If I feel like if I don't write it down, I haven't spent it. But if I did write it down, then it's spent.
No, I understand that 100%. But how? All right. So if you're a corporation like Argo Tea or this hamburger place that I'm discussing, how do you make that decision that under no circumstances, like if you went in there and you ordered a bunch of stuff and you said, "Look, my order is $61, but all I have is cash. Look, here's $61, just like we agreed to. I ordered stuff. They would say no to that.
I think you have to decide how old your customers are that you're appealing to.
Oh, is that what it is?
I just went to this like. You know, pretty cool restaurant downtown.
Yeah.
And I think it's for younger people, millennials. They don't take credit cards. I mean, they don't take cash, only credit cards.
No one has cash on them except you. I guess, Kim, you carry cash?
Some, but not a lot. I use Apple Pay almost for everything if I can.
I think I have $2 on me.
All right, but...
So don't rob me, anyone.
No, it's not worth it. It's not worth the effort.
It isn't. Plus, I'll talk to you, so that will be terrible.
All right, so John yesterday made a point of saying, and I was thinking this as he said it, it says right on money, if you look at money, it says right on there that it's legal tender for any transaction, public or private. The reason they invented money was so you can go out and buy stuff. So how can businesses decide point blank, no, we will not accept it? It's not.
Times have changed, like the gun issue, all right? The gun issues, guns were allowed. We have the right to bear arms.
Right.
Things have changed since then.
Well,
I mean, things have changed since money was first printed. Now, I honestly, if you got 10 people sitting right here, I would bet maybe two of them have cash on them.
That's it, huh?
Well, and technically, they are taking money. It's just not cash in the form, you know, not...
Got to go Bitcoin. But I don't even know what that is.
Future. That's the future. But
so
but
it is cash they're taking, but they're just not taking it in actual form. You know what I'm saying?
And they say it, like big restaurants, it takes too much time to give change. It is just so much. If you, like, do
Doesn't
the math.
Doesn't it take the same amount of
no,
time?
No, you
to
swipe
through?
A card and they go, do you want a receipt? No. Okay, great. I was in and out of Argo Tea today getting my apricot turnover in like 10 seconds.
Yeah, and they'll even email you the receipt. You don't have to waste paper.
So if you went in there, you ordered your tea, it takes a second or two to prepare it, and they hand it to you, and you just reach in your pocket and hand them the money, they would just say, no, out, heretic,
well, no.
Out.
Well, now they just changed? Argo did?
I don't know when their time frame was, but as of now, they're only accepting credit.
I'll be honest with you. The other day, I had $5, and I was going to give them cash, and I thought, you know what? I don't want to wait for the change. I'm running late. I'm in a hurry. It's just so much easier and quicker to just, they swipe a card, they give it back, bing, bang, boom, you're done.
So they're doing this under the guise of it's a faster transaction.
It's not really ever crowded in there, so I don't know why they're doing it.
Yeah,
and
right.
Usually businesses have to pay an extra fee if they use a credit card. Like cash and checks are okay.
That. So that's working against them.
Well,
because
and
they have to pay
a percentage. True. And the other thing is, though, it may cut down on theft. It's easier to track the money if all you're doing is making transactions via
that's
credit card.
No
and
one
Apple
can
pay.
Dip into
Nobody
the register.
Can take the cash.
Except thieves now, they steal electronically. They don't do. They're too lazy.
They're still old school bank robbers.
There are. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you see it in the all news right. all the time, and they all have cool nicknames.
Right. The smiley-faced robber.
Right.
Right.
The footy pajama bandit.
Do they still, when they steal money from banks, do they still steal it in bags that have the dollar sign on the bags like they used to do?
Yeah, because they have to turn it around.
Oh, yeah,
if you'd see the dollar sign,
you'd
know.
It's a thief.
Yeah.
And they have the stuff that explodes on the cash.
So yeah.
That they do have, right?
Yeah, they still have that,
The ink.
The exploding ink packs.
That's fun. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Oh, Wendy and I are headed toward the stream for the bonus hour. We would love for you to join us. That's easy to do. Go to WGNRadio.com or stay here where Steve returns for the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.